The images of thousands of trucks marching towards Parliament Hill, surrounding the building, the tension of this massive protest captured my mind as I meditated on this passage. The images I saw from my window as trucks marched through the parkway, as I heard the unusual sounds of honks, the atmosphere of rage, I could not avoid making a connection to Jesus being pushed by the crowd towards the cliff. A segment of the population represented by the truckers and others who joined is not happy, enraged by what they consider a violation of their personal rights. Not only they want the federal government to drop its vaccine mandate for cross-border essential workers, but the demonstration has morphed into a larger movement against all public health measures. They want normal lives back. The crowd from the synagogue in Jesus' hometown were not happy either. Something happened after he read the scroll on that Sabbath. The text reads, "All spoke well of him and were amazed at the gracious words that came from his lips. Isn't this Joseph's son?" they ask. And then on a dime, this group of people that were there gathered for worship, that knew Jesus since birth, that knew his family, they went from amazed, from perhaps the fuzzy feeling of pride that a boy, he is our own, to rage. Jesus had a prophetic message. Jeremiah knew well, perhaps intuitively, that the task of a prophet was not an easy one. The prophet, a person charged with a message from God, was and is always on the verge, vulnerable in front of the people to whom the message was or is to be delivered, exposed to their audience as Jesus was. Jeremiah knew this and responded to God, "You must be kidding. I'm too young." We remember Moses said to God in Exodus 3 and 4, he had 5 excuses. "I don't have the ability. I'm not adequate for the task. I don't know what to say. I don't know enough. I don't have any authority. People will not take me seriously. I'm not good with words. I'm not a good speaker." When he ran out of excuses, his heart was revealed. And he said, "Please, God, send someone else. I'm not willing." A normal response when God calls us. Maybe we are not called as directly as Jeremiah or Moses or Isaiah, or with a great portent like Isaiah. But when we feel that notched in our minds, or see a need that we know we can meet, or hear that someone is needed for something, or the need to speak up, the natural human tendency is that of fear, insecurity, because we're afraid of failure. We are afraid of rejection. We want to be experts before doing what we're called to do. So detours, derailing, and denials surface immediately. And there are times in life when God calls us to places and roles that we feel are just too big for us. Some people take the challenge, like the ones, for example, in our congregation who have stepped up to coordinate the In From The Call program. Or the ones that are serving the congregation in the redevelopment committee. Or the LGBTQ plus discernment process facilitators. Or our sound and video team. They didn't know how to develop that call, but they stepped in. Others would make excuses like Jeremiah or Moses or me. I have a story, and it's very embarrassing, but I'm going to tell it anyways. Years ago, when I first got the position at the national office, at the United Church National Office, I was happy. I was so excited. I was honored that the hiring committee had chosen me from a big pool of many high-profile applicants. But I remember on that Monday, when the actual job started, feelings of fear, inadequacy, rose up. You could almost hear me saying, God, I'm too young. English is not my first language. I'm practically a newcomer. I'm a student. I'm studying still. I'm not an expert on this. And on and on and on. And because I couldn't convince God, I went to my boss. And this is true. He's currently the General Secretary, Reverend Michael Blair, to fire me. I said, Michael, maybe you made a mistake. Just fire me. You know, I will not make a fuss about this. Just fire me. And he laughed. And he said, Alcris, you are the right person. We are all called, not only to continue delivering the prophetic message of Jesus, but to live every day prophetic lives. We're carrying this in and with our bodies, in our hearts, spreading with our voices and actions the message of hope, justice, peace, and love of God in Jesus. Carrying a prophetic message is not easy. Being a disciple of Jesus is not easy. There is a price to pay. And there is not a manual of instructions for every situation. Like the early church, we need to pray and seek God's guidance in unity as they did. Imagine them I guess they would have had everything figured out. They were with Jesus. That was the very first generation. But still, they had to remain in unity and pray for the lead of the Spirit. In this, like the sound team and the video team and all of us in this new stage of virtual services, and you learning to use Zoom and all of that, we have to learn and to listen and trust that the one who tasked us will lead us, teach us, give us the grace we need for each day to seek that guidance in prayer and in spirit, as I said. The delivery of a prophetic message of this prophetic message that is unpopular, challenging, countercultural, for example, to look after the poor, to forgive, to respond with kindness to evil, to seek justice, to live by faith and not by sight, to pray for what we need and not just grab it, to show God's preference for the poor and marginalized, extending, announcing, enacting God's hospitality to one another, welcoming one another, because in reality, the host is God, not us. Because when we think about hospitality, the host is the one who decides who is invited and who is not. The host decides on the menu that is going to be served, the unspoken rules or traditions of the house, even the time to begin the visit and the time to leave. Often politely suggested, like, well, it has been a great evening, or not so polite, like my dad, signaling my friends that it was time to go home. He used to lower and close all the blinds in the living and dining room and all over, you know, where we were, and dim the lights. But enough about the prophets. Let us go back to our story and focus for a moment on the recipients of the prophetic message. The truckers in Ottawa and the crowds in Nazareth. Their worshiping crowd went from love, from we love you, to we will kill you. This would not be the only time, anyways, that Jesus would encounter this type of crowd. We can remember that in Jerusalem, he went from a crowd shouting hosannas to crucify him. But it is intriguing. What makes a crowd that is gathering on a Sabbath worship or shouting hosannas together to turn into one that is inflamed in rage? What provokes this fast movement from we love you to we'll kill you? What is Jesus serving up his audience that they don't want to receive? Is Jesus provoking them or setting them up to see their reaction? But perhaps he's reading his hearts. And we see this through the Gospels, that we read that Jesus knew people's hearts. In their hearts, perhaps, I see a sense of entitlement. We deserve, we expect. Use your healing power to us. Help your own. Do for us what you're doing for others. We deserve it. This may be where they're bragging rights in their minds. What did they want to hear or see from Jesus? And what did they hear instead? Jesus instead is saying, I'm not going to do the signs for you that I'm doing elsewhere. I'm not going to do what you want me to do or the things I've done in other parts and remind them of the times when the healing and blessing of God had gone to the least expected, the widow and Naaman, the leper. And this has nothing to do with God answering our prayers. It's not about that. It is about he was reading his hearts. And the question stands for us today as well. What is it we don't want to hear from Jesus? And what do we want to hear from Jesus? And it is that sometimes entitlement is an obstacle for really listening and paying attention to what God's Spirit may be saying to us. Their entitlement could have also been saying, like, what Jesus read doesn't speak to me. I'm not oppressed, I'm not poor or blind or imprisoned. And I was thinking, now that we enter into the Black History Month, we could think like Jesus is not speaking to us. Maybe some will think, well, I'm not a minority. I'm not black. I don't know what it feels to be in the fringes of society. I cannot relate to that. For me, life is fair. It is not my issue. Entitlement moves us from the community to me, instead from self to God. Entitlement chooses once what we think we deserve, what we want to hear, what we want to do. You know, it always, like doing this work on racial justice and being myself from a racial minority, for me, doing this work, being an advocate, is not something that I can choose, you know, like choosing what color of suit I'm going to wear today. It is an imperative because I am there. I know what it feels, and I know what others don't see that I can see. So it is part of my call. But when we approach justice, okay, let me see, like shopping, you know, doing grocery shopping, you know, okay, let me see, I'm going to do this. It's different. You don't do it because, you know, there is a little bit of entitlement there, and that's what I thought for years, but don't mind that. Entitlement gives us the right to choose what we want to hear from God and what we don't. What we want to do and not what God is calling us to do. Sometimes, and I can tell you many stories, and I'm sure that Huda and Keith and Anthony have many stories about times when God is calling us to do things we're not prepared to do. Every day, you know, like I have my list of things that I want to do, and many things happen that I'm not prepared to, you know, unexpected events call me, and, you know, that's how it is. So this crowd reacted with anger because of this that was in their hearts, and Jesus could see, and did exactly what they had told them they would do. So what do we want to hear from Jesus that he's not saying to us? These two passages, the other lectionary reading that we didn't use in the service is the well-known passage about love, 1 Corinthians 13, that we hear usually in weddings. But I'm sure the Apostle Paul was not thinking about weddings when he wrote that to the Corinthian church. Paul says, one day, prophecy will pass. Faith will not be necessary. But what will remain is love. So it made me to think, to reflect about approaching and reflecting about our call from the perspective of love. At the end of the scene, when Jesus was pushed to the cliff, he steals away. Grace can be rejected, but not stopped. Amen.